Hi, welcome to the River Talk Podcast. This is a podcast with Priscilla Macy, Eric Weiseth, and myself, Zach Collier. In this podcast, we're talking about whitewater stuff and just rafting, kayaking, whatever we feel like. And Eric and Priscilla can't make it this week, so I have a guest host, Aaron Erdick. Welcome to the podcast, Aaron.
Hey, what's up, River Talk? How are you guys doing today?
And we're going to talk about rafting a little bit and just what Aaron's been up to and some of his exploits. But yeah. Before we do, I want to start with news of the week. And in my world, the big news is there's a big public lands package that passed last week, passed the House. So it's now passed the Senate and the House, and Trump is almost definitely going to sign it. And you know, the last big package like this that's passed was in 2009. So we've been getting one of these about every 10 years. And what happens is one conservation bill, like Oregon Wildlands Act, for example, can't pass on its own. We need to put a lot of these together into one. So this package protects things all over the country, mostly good stuff. Some stuff, if you're an environmentalist, you might not be super happy about in other parts of the country. But here in Oregon, it's great. It adds a wilderness area, 10 new wild and scenic rivers. It's just a great thing. So I'm pretty excited about it and just wanted to thank all of you that maybe wrote a letter or clicked on a Facebook thingy or sent a tweet or anything you did to support it. It's a big deal, and Trump's going to sign it any day now.
Good stuff.
Aaron, do you have any news? I know you have a festival you might want to talk about.
We'll talk a little bit about Pastigo Fest maybe later in the show, or maybe right now. Does that sound good to you? Okay. So a few years ago, a friend of mine, Dale Guneri from Kosher's Rafting, and I, threw a sweet barn party at his rafting company and kind of made like a little rafting festival thing for to commemorate our friend Frank Sade's life, who was a founding member of our organization, Dirtbag Paddlers. And it's kind of a long story. I'm going to just try to keep it short. But basically, you know, we still do Frank Fest, but we started our a little bit more legit festival with races and
that. Wait, can I interrupt really quick?
Yeah.
Where is this? Where are these rivers?
Wisconsin.
Okay.
Sorry. Okay. So there's the Peshtigo and the Menominee River up there.
I've never heard of these rivers.
The Menominee is like a 3-mile run, but one rapid is about a half mile. So you take a 16-foot raft with 10 or 12 people in it, however many people are booking for the trip that day. And you actually tow a 16-foot raft behind your 16-footer that you're in with the guests. You leave that raft tied up at the top of the rapids. You run down through the first time, and then you hike back up to your second raft. So it's a cool trip. It's pretty unique. Our friend Dale, his father was one of the pioneers of the rafting scene up there and stuff. So it's kind of cool to be up there with them. I mean, you're talking about kind of like the pioneers of boating in that area, and this is like how they've done it for years, which is different than a lot of other places in the country. You have like, you know, out here there's like a certain way to do things, and on the East Coast, and then in the Midwest they just do whatever they want, you know, whatever works, you know. And it's awesome. It's a lot of fun, and you know, a lot of customers really enjoy it. I think they do like 75% or 80% repeat business up there, you know, for the rafting company. So it's a good thing. And So that's the Menominee River. The Peshtigo River is a little bit easier, Class 3 river. It's continuous rapids. They call it the Roaring Rapids section. Actually, like in the springtime, you come around like some of the corners, and the whole river is just like silver because of, you know, just like little Class 2 and 3 ripples going down, and then you have a couple a little bit more significant drops. So we started Frank Fest a few years ago, and then we kind of transitioned into Peshtigo Fest, which is quickly growing into one of the largest festivals up there in the upper Midwest. There's a couple other big ones. You have like the freestyle stuff in Wausau, like the Freestyle Midwest Freestyle Championships, I think is what it's called. And then you have Paddle Mania in Duluth, which is also a great festival put on by good people. So it's good to get, you know, the paddlers there together. Out in that scene, you have, like, you know, people in Chicago, Milwaukee, Minneapolis, Iowa, And then, you know, there's just like small towns in between. So it's not like out here where you just have, you know, hundreds of boaters living in the Hood River or White Salmon area or down by the Rogue or Middle Fork. It's pretty much, you know, pretty desolate. Like if you don't network into paddling with, you know, people and stuff, like you're not going to see other paddlers. You're not just going to show up to the put in of the river and expect to see paddlers there. So that's something that's a little bit different than the Northwest or other places that, you know, rafting is kind of more of a, you know, popular activity, or kayaking for that matter. Yeah. So the festival, the festival's 3 days. We do a race. We raffle off prizes. We have bands play. There's camping at the festival. It's a really great time. It kind of gets everybody from that paddling scene together at the beginning of the year. It's a great, you know, it's great to see everybody after a long winter. You know, you're sitting up there with 6 months with snow and ice, like where you're driving your pickup truck out on the river that's going to be, you know, have the rapids on it later that year. So, yeah, it's really cool to see everybody and get everybody together up there. And
when is it?
It's April this year. So usually we shoot for about the third weekend of April. This year it's actually going to be Easter, so we actually moved the festival back. That also kind of guarantees that we're going to have a little bit better weather this year. Last year, I want to say like a week before the festival, it snowed like 40 inches, and it was cold up until like maybe the day before, you know, campers started showing up, 40 inches of snow. So we're on there, and, you know, all these festivals, you know, your success is dependent on your volunteers and the people that you have involved. And we have great people involved with this festival. And one of our friends actually showed up with a snowblower to the campground, and at 7:30 in the morning was snow blowing out a field for people to camp in. And we luckily got 50 degree weather that weekend, and all the snow ended up like melting considerably, and we got some pretty high water for it, so it was great. So our thoughts were moving the festival back a week. We'll kind of avoid some of that nasty weather, and hopefully we get a few more new boaters out there that are looking to you know, expand their skills or just network into meeting people that are into paddling as well. So
Aaron, you live in Hood River now, or in White Salmon, or yeah, the Gorge. Are you going back just for the festival?
Just for the festival.
That's prime Hood River boating time.
I'm going for 2 weeks, too.
Wow.
There's really good boating up in Wisconsin. You have all the stuff up by the Lake Superior shore and by the Lake Michigan shore. So, you know, do a little bit of good creeking out there. Paddlers compare it to, like, Norway paddling. You know, it's like big, big slides and stuff like that. Really fun. Great place to learn how to really expand your skills, because the rivers don't run that often. There's not, like, a lot of, like, undercuts and sieves. Like, there are some, but it's not, like, as prevalent as, like, on the East Coast or something. So you get comfortable running, you know, bigger drops, and that's where I started rafting in California, and when I went up there, that's where I really got into like creek boating, and I started running like 25 foot waterfalls and stuff, and, you know, just kind of like touring around up there, getting first rafting descents. And then as I got to know the rivers better, I started bringing some of my other rafting friends from the area up there, and now we have like some classics like the Black River and the Silver River. And then the Duluth area also has some really good paddling. We call it the North Shore. And the North Shore is in between Duluth and the Canadian border along Lake Superior. I want to say every 6 to maybe 10 miles, there's another class 4, class 5 river with big slides and drops. Wow. And stuff. So it's a really awesome place to go and actually check out and paddle a little bit. There's great like camping up there along like Lake Superior. So like every night you're just like camping on like these desolate rocky beaches along Lake Superior. It's incredible. So yeah, it's something I try to get back for every year. My sister just had a baby, so I've got a young nephew, and, it'll be nice to see family and stuff as well for that trip. You know, that's where my parents and, you know, my family are. So I'd spend a little bit of time with them, and then get together with the boys at Koshers and take like a week after the festival and go and paddle up in the UP or up in UP, Upper Peninsula of Michigan, or the North Shore up by Duluth. So, yeah, it's always a good time, and everybody's welcome. Like, usually after the festival, you get a bunch of stragglers that are just, like, kind of hanging around, and then we kind of go on, like, a little whitewater crusade up to the up north. So, yeah, it's great, and it's something I plan on actually doing for a long time. And
cool.
Yeah, it's just kind of an annual event that's becoming bigger and better every year, so it's kind of cool to be part of it and kind of help organize it and just see it grow. And it's nice to like kind of like also get some publicity for the rivers up there and stuff. A lot of the wild and scenic stuff actually originated up there in Wisconsin. Some of the original, like, what was it?
The Wolf.
10 maybe or so.
Wasn't rivers. The Wolf one of the original eight wild and scenic?
The Wolf, that's in, yep.
Wisconsin?
Yeah, it's maybe like 25 miles from the Peshtigo.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the Wolf River and then also the St. Croix River, which is the border between Minnesota and Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
There's some whitewater over in that area as well. And it was those were some of the first rivers that were actually designated wild and scenic. And in you know, recent years, it's there's been some things that have happened up there with the river communities and like land ownership and stuff, where on the Menominee we actually lost our takeout. They emailed the rafting company and said, hey, we're closing the takeout of the river in 2 weeks. And 2 weeks later they were building a barbed wire fence around the actual takeout there. So things like that have happened. So it's really important to host these festivals and get people together so that we can organize and prevent that from happening other places or maybe improve access. We also organized a couple of river cleanups up there with this organization, People Earth Water, who help us throw the festival on. We actually do a cleanup float on the Peshtigo, the Wolf, the Menominee, you know, throughout the summer. So a lot of the a lot of the festival goes to actually like help out their nonprofit and stuff like that. Like all the money for the race always gets donated. It's like, I think it's like $5 or $10 to enter the race. So it's not a lot of money, but it's cool to donate that money to, you know, a nonprofit up there that centers around those river cleanups and stuff. Yeah. So yeah, it's a cool thing, and they've got a kayaking school that they started up there as well, Peshtigo Outdoor Learning Center. It's my friend Rick Clade. If you're looking to get into maybe learning how to paddle, or you paddle a little bit and you want to get better, Rick is definitely the person to hit up. He's going to be up there for Peshtigo Fest, and you can check him out. And you know, one cool thing is you know, when you get people into paddling somewhere, they come back, you know, and like the Nantahala River down in North Carolina is like that, where, you know, people learn how to paddle there, and that's where they paddle for their first couple years. They start to meet their friends, then they might, you know, go over to the Pigeon or the Ocoee as their skills start progressing. So the Peshtigo is kind of one of those places as well, and you know, it's not the gnar boating that sometimes we're doing, but you know, that's like where it's really cool to bring people into the sport, and you got to start somewhere, and it's a great place to start. So that's all I'm going to say about that.
Well, I want to ask more about you personally and how you got started boating. I have to say, like, I noticed your name popping up, I don't know, a couple of years ago, just with, like, next to big waterfall drops and R1ing. And I've paddled with you a little bit, but I don't know much about you personally. Like, where did you grow up?
So I grew up in northern Wisconsin in a small town called Rhinelander, home of the Hodag. Shout out to you guys out there. So that's where I grew up, and I was into skiing as a kid. And we'd go to, like, I was on like a ski racing team in high school, and then I got into like snowboarding and like hurting myself as I got a little bit older. I decided to move out to Mammoth, California, after a couple winters in the Midwest, and I moved to Mammoth, and it was actually a really, really awesome move for me, because not only did I get out west, I also ended up like getting employee housing or whatever, and my roommate was a raft guide down on the Kern River, and I was like, hey, you know, I do this whitewater kayaking thing. It was really like, you know, I barely knew how to roll, like I, you know, could do like a combat roll. I was like, you know, I'm shit. And so anyways, I was doing a little bit of, I could talk the talk a little bit with this guy, Arlo, and he's like, yeah, man, you should come down to the Kern and check it out. And I was like, yeah, dude, being a river guide, that would be pretty cool. Like, river guide in the summer, ski in the winter. Like, what a that's like the dream life right there. So I went down to the Kern with him and ended up meeting this pro kayaker, Austin Nickel. And we ran this Brush Creek in California. Yeah. Are you familiar? Yeah, yeah. It's like these
it's like class slide. 3 plus it's waterfalls.
Like class 3 plus, but it's like 150 feet per mile, like kind of steep creaking, but like it's class 3.
He had a website. That guy, Austin Nichols, had a website. Like,
he was the best back in the day. And he actually got out of paddling. He went on a Grand Canyon trip and was super blissed out and met this guy. And he was sponsored by like Jackson or something at the time. And he traded his kayak for a BB gun and a bottle of whiskey and went on his own like spiritual quest.
Wow.
Like, yeah, that's a true story. And I still talk to him.
Wait, on the Grand Canyon trip?
After the Grand Canyon, yeah.
Something happened in the Grand Canyon. He traded his kayak for
a BB gun and a bottle of whiskey.
Have you talked to him since?
Yeah. We're still in touch. He's somewhere out in Northern California living in a yurt and just... You know, he just kind of got out of paddling.
Wow.
Like, you know, and you know, that happens to a lot of people where we get into different phases of life and stuff. And, you know, we're still friends. So, you know, that's what's important. But anyways, yeah, no, I looked up to Austin and he really was killing it back in the day. So, yeah, he took me down and he was like, you know, you should probably like stay and guide here this summer and like, you know, work on like your skills and stuff and paddle. I was like, yeah, that sounds good. So here I am, class 3 kayaker, getting my ass kicked all the time out there on the Kern River on high water. And I started going to guide school and had access to rafts and started rafting more. And Austin would be going up to maybe like run like a Thunder Run, which is like the class 5 section. He's like, hey, you want an R2? Which is like where you two-person a raft. Like, most of you obviously know that, but if you don't, you know, there you go. So anyways, yeah, we'd go up and we'd R2, and I really started to like it. And, you know, eventually I was like rafting class 5 all the time. I'm like, oh, this is great. And I was kayaking less and less, and I'm like, okay. And then I like cracked my kayak or something, and I was like inflatable kayaking. And I was on this commercial trip, and these senior guides on the trip were like, I looked in the trailer and my kayak paddle was gone. And I'm like, guys, I can't go. Like, I don't have my kayak paddle. And they're like, yeah, we took it out of the trailer. Like, if you're going to do this raft guiding thing, you got to like learn how to C1. That's like how you're going to like learn how to maneuver the boat and do stuff. So I get out there on this class 3 run in this ducky, and I'm like literally just paddling in circles. My buddy paddles up. He's like, hey, you got to do the J-stroke. This is how
by C1, you mean take a ducky with a raft paddle.
With a raft paddle. Okay. Yeah, that's C1, Canoe 1, or whatever. Yeah.
I'll call IK1.
Yeah. Yeah, IK1. We'll call it that. So anyways, yeah, we started, you know, that's how I kind of started. And the Kern River is a great river to progress on. You have like class 3, 4, and 5 there. It runs all summer. Yeah. And being a rookie raft guide, you don't really work that much, you know. So I was able to go paddling a lot, and I just kind of, you know, that's how I started to learn how to R1. My buddy had like a high side shredder type raft, and he was paddling that thing. He's like, hey, you just got to focus on not doing the crossbow where you're like reaching over the boat and paddling on like the left side and then reaching back over and paddling on the right side. So he's like, yeah, just focus on paddling on one side. And I started getting pretty good at it. And I'm like, yeah, one of these days I'm going to try this shredder thing out. And I tried it and I was like, man, this thing is great. I got to buy one of these. And High Side's located down there on the Kern. So I got in touch with the owner, Dick Deschamps, and Brandon Williams, the manager. And I actually ended up like buying a blemish boat from them and started R1-ing a shredder all the time. Like, that kind of became my, you know, that was the only raft I had. And
let me interrupt you real quick. I've heard R1-ing a shredder be called S1.
S1, yeah.
Is that right?
S1,
I'm still learning the technology, the terminology.
Yeah, so, yeah. Technically,
there's a lot out there. There's S1, R1, C1, R2. It depends on your craft, R4, how many of you.
Yeah. 4 people in there. Yeah. So yeah, that's, you know, so I got the Shredder, and then I started running stuff that was like maybe a little bit harder than commercial class five. Like I ran like upper, like the Kings River, like where the confluence is, like there's like a,
yeah, but the south of Middle Fork meet
Garlic Falls, yeah, section. Yeah, it's a good multi-day. I did that first, and then I did like some other California stuff, came up here, I was like running Benham and the Truss, and then California dried up, and I went out to Michigan, back home, and I was working at a ski resort out there. There was no water in California. They called me in like April. They're like, hey, our snowpack is like 23% or something. Like, you don't, like, if you can't get here in the next like 2 or 3 weeks, like, don't bother coming because there's not going to be much of a season. So I lined up some work out there at Kosher's Rafting in Wisconsin and actually started like paddling with these guys, you know, out there all the time, and we started running like the Black, that was like the first, and then like the Presque Isle, and then you know, so I kind of just took off with it. I just started going around, and my girlfriend would run, or my buddy would run shuttle for me and take pictures, and dude, I was doing a lot of solo boating, which isn't really the best idea, but you know, in a pinch, you like you do what you got to do, you know, and you try to do things as safely and smartly as possible. And so anyways, I show up to this race in Duluth that I found out about on like Facebook or something, you know, I'm like, oh wow, there's a race. There's like other paddlers up here. And I show up to the put in and with my raft, and these kayakers are like looking at me like, this guy's going to die or something, you know? And I'm like, no, I'm solid. Like I ran Gorge, which is a 45 footer in a Shredder. And they're like, no, you didn't. Like, you're crazy. So I show up, you know, I get to the put in, and like the leader of this group, this guy, we'll just call him John, and he turns to me, he goes, if you don't keep up, if you fall behind, we're leaving you. Like, this is, I'm showing these guys down. I don't mind showing you down, but like, you got to keep up. I'm like, okay. So that's kind of the game with like paddling with kayakers with a raft, you know, you can't like impede what they're doing, or, you know, like, yeah, they're going to leave you behind. So, you know,
which, like, isn't cool.
Which isn't cool. Yeah,
I'm glad you didn't say his name, because it's like you should be looking out for people you're with no matter what boat they're in.
Yeah, but also, you know, somebody shows up to the put in of a river with a strange craft that you've never seen go down any of those rivers before. Yeah. They were all, you know, this is all like first descent stuff. And, you know, he shows up and he's like, yeah, I'm solid. How do you really know until you see him on the water? So we got down, we went down through like some boogie water and ran like the first class four plus rapid. And you know, I came out fine. And you know, there's maybe like 10 kayakers in this group and they're all cheering. And after that, we were just like, all right, yeah, you're welcome to come boat with us anytime. Like, you know, and they took me on like runs like the Presque Isle Canyon and like just... So I'm up there, I'm doing all this like class five boating and working up there and stuff. And then we'd take like trips out to West Virginia. And then, you know, so was in winter in Wisconsin, you know, it's freezing cold. Like right now, I wouldn't be surprised if it's negative 20 below zero. Wow. You know, it's February up there. So it might be 20 below zero. It might be 20 above zero. Either way, it's still cold. It's been winter for 6 months. So I went out to... I would go down to like the southeast to like the Asheville area, and I met some paddler down there, Daniel Young, and he's like, hey, yeah, you got to start, you should do the Green River. So I did a little bit of reading, you know, and I kind of found out about like the progression of rivers in the southeast. And so I, you know, I started off on like the Ocoee and the Nolichucky, and then like, I was like, okay, what's like the next step up from there? Like Big Laurel, Big Hungry Creek, and then I started running like North Fork, French Broad, Watauga, Nanahala Cascades, and then finally, like, I felt comfortable on the Green River, you know. And once you get on the Green, there's a lot of different like techniques that you're actually using that it really helps to be R1-ing, because like you want to be on one tube on the raft and kind of like leading through like all these different, like you're going down the river and there's like three different rock slots and each one is like narrower than the raft. So you kind of like have to like lean up on one tube and like squeeze yourself in between some of the rocks and the drops. And Daniel, he had been boating down there since he was really young.
Was he a kayaker or a rafter?
He's a kayaker, a rafter, and just a general badass. Okay. he's an incredible paddler. He's a kayak instructor and also a very good R1 rafter. He kind of showed me the green, and then like I was just like working at Subway at the time, so right by the green. So I was like going every day after work and just like running the working man's lap is what they call it down in Asheville, where you just kind of like show up at the Green River Takeout and wait for somebody else that's getting off of work, and literally. You go for a lap. So I'd show up with my raft, like, hey, you want to go for a lap? And like, people would give me crazy looks, like, you got to keep up. I don't know if you're going to fit through Go Left. I'm like, no, I do this all the time. And pretty soon, like, I counted up to like 45 runs, and then I just kind of was like, I've done it enough times where, like, now I don't know how many times I've ran the green now, but. So I started running that, and then that kind of
opened. The green is not something people normally raft.
No,
right? It's not. Yeah. I don't think of people R2-ing it. You don't see a lot of rafters out there, so
no. It's very rare. Yeah. I think that there's probably like less than 10 people that have actually rafted the Green Narrows.
They've ever done it.
To that point. And then like as I got more comfortable on the green over the next couple years of being down there in the Asheville area, I started R2-ing with people and stuff. Like took down I just enjoy taking people down, and like a lot of people like really feel like, you know, they're on top of the world when they run something like that. You know, if you're running like the Ekoe and stuff like that, and then you go run the green, you are on top of the world. Like, trust me, like that's, you know, like there's not too many people that are doing it. And it was really cool to share that with people. And, you know, like I also had some experiences of like showing people down that were R2-ing. And, you know, the first time I showed these guys down, I was R2-ing. I got before the first rapid, there's this rapid called Bride of Frankenstein. When I mean the first rapid, I mean the first rapid of the green race. Like, this is like a class 4 or something. It's just like a little lead-in thing. Well, I pinned right in the middle of it until the water shut off. So the water, like, turns on every day. They, like, release into, like, a dam. They make power. And, like, the outflow of the powerhouse is actually what you're kayaking on. So that's why there's so many, like, days that you can actually paddle down there. Because, like, it's in the power company's best interest to have that dam running, as well as, you know, for the paddlers, we can get out there and, you know, get some green laps in. So, but the first time I showed people down, I actually got stuck in the first rapid until the water shut off, and then tried to show these guys down with, maybe like 4 inches of water, which is really low on the green. And we had to hike out, and one of the guys didn't wear shoes or had sandals on and lost them. So we were all like it's like maybe like a 3 or 4 mile walk back to the put in down. Like the first part is a trail, and then you're just out on like these country bumpkin roads, and we're all switching off shoes because one of the guys actually lost his shoes on the river. So that was one of those interesting moments of doing the green. And after that, I kind of just was like, yeah, when I do this with people, I'm going to make sure that I have ample time before the water shuts off, so I never have to do this again. That's kind of like my, I don't know. And then,
How'd you end up here in the gorge?
In the gorge. So I've been paddling here for years where, you know, winter season would come around. I'd, you know, make a trip out here to, you know, fly out to Portland. It's pretty cheap to fly from, like, Minneapolis to Portland. I'd paddle with, like, Dan McCain and Robert Delgado and Josh Sheldon, who are like the badasses out here in this area. And we would do truss laps, and I did a couple little whites with Dan. And a couple years ago, last winter it was, we were like in Wisconsin, and it was kind of getting to that part of the winter where it gets long. And we decided that we were going to move out here to the gorge, and we ended up actually coming out here. And it's actually really hard to find a place to live here.
and a job.
Like, it's hard to find job. A place to live and a job. It's just kind of like a place that there's a lot of like seasonal work here, a lot of like serving jobs and stuff like that. So, Yeah, so anyways, the first time that we, like when we came out here last winter, we really couldn't line all those things up. So we actually ended up living over in Bend, which is like 3 hours to the south. Bend is great. They've got good rivers there. You have like River House and Meadow Camp, and then you have like the big class 5 rapids there as well. Benham, Lava, and Dillon, and then there's like a good class 3 section, Big Eddy. So yeah, we lived up there, but I found myself driving here to the gorge all the time. Like I was here like, you know, 3 days a week, you know, and I was working in Bend, so I was like driving 3 hours back and forth all the time. So then, you know, this summer we made the move up here to the gorge and been in love with it ever since. So, and one nice thing, you know, what I really like about paddling up here is that you have options every day. Like you can go paddling 365 days a year. It doesn't matter if it's the lowest day of summer, or, you know, in the middle of winter when everything's blown out high, you have like little creeks, you can paddle class 4, class 5 every single day. So that's what really drew me to the area, and that's what's keeping me here, you know. And now I've run the truss a lot, and I'm starting to get on the Little White more, which is definitely a step up for rafting. A couple, maybe like a month and a half ago, I was like the first person to ever like R1 it at like proper flows. Like somebody did it at like really low water. Actually, Priscilla did it at really low water a few years ago, and I saw these pictures of them. They're out there on this trip. There's a video somewhere out there on Vimeo or something, and it's like these people, they're tubing down the Little White. They run Spirit and everything in tubes, and Priscilla's out there like R1ing her raft, and she gets to like the lip of Spirit, which is like a 30-foot drop, but it's not just like a straightforward 30 footer. It kind of like rolls over the lip, so that means that you have like kind of a late boof, and then it's like it lands on like a boil, and it's just a really hard impact. So yeah, I've never actually ran it, but there's a video of Priscilla like going off the lip of this drop and then just like jumping out of the raft like, I don't know, kamikaze style or something. Like, oh yeah, you're going to swim for sure. You know, I don't know. She just jumps out of the raft right at the lip. It was so awesome.
I mean, rafting Spirit's not a really good idea, right?
Horrible idea.
I mean, you're basically going over a lip kind of holding on.
The beta that I got from my old roommate, Josh Sheldon, was that basically, like, it's going to be like a car crash, and it just depends on how much you're going to get hurt when you hit the water. Because he went off, and he actually broke his ankle the first time that he went, and then there's, like, it's not like a cave, like an underwater cave, but there's like a little room behind the veil of the waterfall there. And he actually got stuck there, and they had to like paddle in there and get him out. And it became, some people took pictures and posted on the internet and were like, hey, look at these raft beaters. And, you know, like, we don't, like out here or basically anywhere that you paddle in a raft, like you're kind of an ambassador to our sport. You know, you don't want like to give us like a negative image. And I've always been like kind of careful about like putting carnage out there and stuff like that, just because, like, you know, like we're kind of like having to prove ourselves, you know, as rafters, and you know, kayakers do the same thing with beginners. You know, if you don't know somebody, it's hard to just like know what their skill level is and what they can expect. And you know, it's something that all of us have to do as boaters, is just kind of like be inclusive, but like at the same time, you don't want people to get on your trip and hurt themselves or do something that they shouldn't be doing. So it's something that that we all have to kind of think about, you know, as far as that goes, like including people, but yet like, you know, not getting people in over their heads, you know.
Yeah, so we've talked about that a lot in the podcast on our early episodes, you know, when people show up to put in whether you should allow them to come or not, how to make that decision. And you know, it's a tough one. It's hard to decide whether to say yes to people, and then if you do, then your responsibility to them if they have problems.
Yeah, yeah.
So I want to ask you about dirtbag paddlers, which is, again, something I know almost nothing about, except that I keep seeing this everywhere.
Yeah.
You said earlier you're a part of it. What does that mean? Like,
So my friend Mike Joseph, which some of you guys might know from the Facebook world, him and Dale and our other friend Jason Flannery from Bend, they went out on a Golly Fest trip, and when they went out there, they started like this Facebook page, and they started posting pictures of it from their trip, and they like went to a bar and forgot to pay their tab and like posted the picture of their unpaid tab, and like it was just like a joke. And then all of a sudden they're like getting all these people like following them on Facebook and or following their page. They're like, hey, 1,000 people that like us, and they started like having people that were like commenting on all their posts and liking them and stuff, and they're like, hey, do you want to like be an admin for this, like kind of like help us do this? Like, there's really no direction when it first started. It was just kind of like us having fun, and it really evolved into something like bigger than us, you know. Like, they're doing, like, we've organized like the world's largest river cleanup. They organized a river cleanup in, I can't remember how many countries it was, but it was all over the world.
Wow.
So yeah, it's kind of evolved into that, and you know, there's been some, you know, it's just been like kind of fun to see something like that grow. And we did a magazine, like an online like blog magazine for a while, where we were getting these people that were writing like these awesome Facebook posts, and they were great to read. And I was like, man, we should do like one of these blog things. But I didn't know anything about doing a blog, so I was like, hey, Mike, you should check out this blog thing. And Mike actually became like a writer and an editor of a online magazine that none of us knew anything about. And maybe I ended up writing like 2 or 3 articles for it, not about anything great. Like, I'm a horrible writer, but I do enjoy like reading, like, you know, stuff like that, and listening to podcasts and whatnot. So,
that's kind of how this podcast started in some ways. For me, like, putting out content's important, whether it's blogs or whatever, but writing blogs is hard. And it's
so hard.
It's way easier to sit here and talk for an hour than to sit behind a computer and type your thoughts. It's easier to talk about things.
It's a lot easier to convey like what you're saying, like when you're saying it, like tone, delivery, you know, like just makes, you know, it's easier to express yourself through talking. But
it's less work though. Like, I could have done an interview with you where I emailed you and then you wrote an answer back, and we wrote this big blog post we could have posted. But it's less work for us to sit down and just talk.
I mean, I couldn't ramble for 27 minutes about Peshtigo Fest and about R1ing and not finish my complete story anyways in an article like that. So, no, I appreciate you having me on the show here.
But what is Dirtbag Paddlers now? Like, I just, you know, I'm very confused about Dirtbag Paddlers. Like, why it exists, what it does, who's a part of it. Like, the average listener out there, what is it?
You know, at this point, I don't even really know. I'm a founding member of it. It's just gone so many different ways. It's just like, honestly, like, it's just a good way to like promote the river scene that you're in. Uh-huh. You know, we do like the river cleanups and stuff, which is really important as well. We do like advocacy, you know, for like, we took a bunch of, we signed, made like petitions and stuff for like making the wild and scenic Nolichucky and stuff like that. So that's kind of what it's like transferring into. When it started, dude, it was just a Facebook page, you know, just like a bunch of people like posting their stuff, and like they got like 20,000 followers. So like, I mean, like for me, it's like coming up as like a paddler or whatever. I was like on there and like I'd post like a video on my like personal Facebook page or whatever. I'd get like 50 likes. I'm like, oh cool, they have 50 likes, that's great. I'd put something on there to have like 7,000 views and 200 comments, and it's just a good way to like reach people. And I feel like, you know, like it really brought together like a bunch of like good strong heads, and we all kind of like, oh yeah, we kind of like did like the blog thing for a while, and we've thrown these festivals and these successful festivals and stuff. And, so it's just constantly evolving. Now, that doesn't really answer your question at all. Like, what is Dirtbag Paddlers?
It's good to know there's not like really,
there's no rules to Dirtbag Paddlers.
That's good to know. Is it an official group? Do you guys have a business?
Did actually like initiate somebody into it once. Okay. So like, this guy's like, hey, I want to be a Dirtbag Paddler admin. We're out at this river, and I had a Barack Obama blow up doll. And this guy actually wrote it down, a 60 foot like water slide thing. I was like, yeah, you're an admin, and here's a free t-shirt that I didn't pay for that I stole from Mike Joseph. And yeah, I don't know if that's a it's just something that we're trying to have fun with, or we're trying to have fun with. You know, I've kind of stepped back from it now. It's kind of played its course a little bit, but you know, I still post on there sometimes. Yeah. You know, it's kind of fun. And it's really cool to actually go on there and give like your friends props too. Like, this guy, Alex Tanzi, he's out here paddling, and I'm a huge fan of him. And there's all these paddlers out there. They're excellent paddlers. Like, you know, paddlers like Jeremy Nash and Andrew Morrissey. They're not like real pro paddlers. You know, they're not on that stage like Ben Maher or Aniel or Rafa or whatever. But they're savage. They're savage kayakers, and they're just like living in their vans and doing, you know, the dirtbag thing, you know, like living in their van at the takeout of the river and traveling around and getting around to these races and stuff. And it's really cool to throw those guys props, you know, and for them to get new followers and stuff, because, you know, that's like social media kind of sucks. And you know, it's just like there's a lot of like negativity out there, and like just it's weird, you know. But it is still, you know, important to like have exposure and stuff, especially for like these guys that are like trying to be pro paddlers and stuff and try to make a name for themselves, yeah. You know. And you know, they're just doing what they love to do, like they're not like out there like trying to like brag about what they're doing, but it's cool to follow along and see these guys and also like put them out there, like, hey, like, this guy's dope, like, check him out, like, he ran Money Drop higher than anybody, or, like, this guy, Andrew, he broke both of his legs, and now he's, like, kayaking in, you know, Ecuador, or Chile, or running 100-foot waterfalls, like, all the time. Do you know who I'm talking about?
No, Andrew. I have no idea.
He actually lives up here in Hood River, and up in the Pacific Northwest, but he's always traveling, and I just admire him, you know, he's a great dude, and, you know, like, that's what I use the internet for, is for like networking and like also like seeing these people's cool videos and stuff. I mean, I feel like inspired by some of these guys. I know, like, you know, people have told me like, hey, like watch all your videos and stuff. I'm like, dude, it makes me feel good. Like, I'm just normal. Like, we're all just like normal people, like, just, you know, like doing what we like to do. So it's cool when you get a little bit of recognition, or somebody like gives you a compliment, you know, like it makes you feel good. So,
I mean, social media in my mind is the internet today.
Yeah.
Like, people don't, like, back in 5 or 10 years ago, people would go to web pages and you'd go to this web page and move around. Now you just go to social media and that opens up the world to you. And
do
so,
do you remember like boating chat rooms? When I first like started getting into boating, there's like chat rooms, like River Talk and Mountain Buzz was like another one.
Boater Talk. No, in California, it was Boof.com.
Oh, yeah.
Go to Boof.com. And yeah, that's how you get beta and share ideas.
Yeah.
Now you can just open up Facebook or Instagram and just be like, see what's going on.
Yeah, send Dane Jackson a message.
Yeah.
Like, be like, yo, Dane, I see you're doing all this cool stuff. Like, I want to do this. Like, you know, like,
the fact that you can communicate with anybody is pretty cool.
I wonder how many people have actually like seen like a Dane Jackson kayaking video and got into kayaking. Been like, this is really cool. Like, look what this guy's doing. And I'm like, well, this is what I'm going to do. The other thing is like, my friend Alex Tanzi and I were talking about this last night. And I'm just going to bring it up again here on the podcast because I thought it was pretty cool. Is like, we look at all like these young paddlers. Like, there's all these kids that are like 15, 16 to, you know, 21, and they're killing it. And like, they're progressing so fast. Like, the sport of kayaking, like, dude, I'm watching this guy, Jeremy Nash. He's a young kid, like maybe 17, 18. He's running like 70, 80 foot waterfalls, doing freewheels off of like Spirit and Big Brother. And I'm like, dude, you're crazy, crushing it, you know? And like, a lot of it is like, you know, like, part of it is like social media is like pushing the limits, but GoPros, first person footage is like a great tool for these guys because they can see like where like stroke placement is and where like what their body's doing and stuff. Where like back in the day, like when they just had like third person cameras, you're like trying to like, you know, you like climb up above a waterfall, set up a tripod, like film. and then go, but you'd never like get that like actual feel, and you couldn't like actually see where they're like placing their strokes. So like the progression of paddling is going crazy right now. Like yeah. I can't believe how these young kids, man, that's what I'm just super impressed, and I can't wait to see like where the kayaking scene is in like 10 years from now, because like I think that like, you know, people are just swinging for the fences all the time.
Yeah.
You know, like it's like, you know, I just see people going for it, and it's really cool. So,
the last thing I want to ask you about is sort of safety related. When I know there's a lot of paddlers out there, they're like class 3-4 boaters. They're probably doing like the middle white salmon or the wind, or in California, like the Tuolumne or the Upper Gully. And they want to progress towards getting rad and starting to run big waterfalls, big class 5. What advice would you have for somebody who's, you know, a normal class 4+ boater that wants to start pushing the limits? What does it take to like move up to that
progression?
Progression.
You want to start off, like if you're running the Gully, you know, you want to look for that next hardest river, you know, and like when you feel comfortable, you'll know when you want, you know, like kayaking isn't something that's like natural, like that we do every day. So like when you're comfortable, like running, like let's say like out here, you have like the progression of like Canyon Creek, the Truss, Little White, you know, and like there's other stuff in there too, but just to be real brief about it, you know, that's kind of it. So like when you're comfortable, like running the Gully, and then you go run like, you know, something a little bit harder, like maybe like lower Big Sandy or something like that. And then like, you know, you feel comfortable on that, and then you run like Top Yawk, and then you run like Lower Meadow, which is like a really stout run. And that's kind of how it goes. And like, that might take you years. It might take you 5 years to run those rivers and feel comfortable and, you know, whatever, but that's your own progression. And like, one thing that I'm starting to notice as I'm getting like older is like, physically you might decline a little bit, but you know, like your paddling, like your form and stuff, it just keeps getting better. Like you see paddlers that are 50 years old plus, like Clay Wright's better paddler at 50 than what he was at 25, just because of like boat technology, and also just like, you know, his form and stuff. Like you're constantly like getting better. It doesn't matter how old you are. Like, you're going to progress. So if you are one of those people that are trying to get on harder runs, like, take your time. Make smart choices. You know, bring the necessary safety gear. Have a river knife. Have a pin kit. You know, things are going to happen out there on the river. And that's, like, where you get, like, your experience, you know. Like, I don't know how many times I've gotten my raft pinned and stuck and, you know, everything else. And every time that happens, you gain a little bit of experience of how, like, what to do, what to expect. You're going to be more calm. You're, you know, just, you know, everything kind of like, you know, just adds up, you know, and that's where you get your experience from. And just take it slow. Don't try to go out and go off a 90-foot waterfall for your social media presence or something like that, because, you know, like, you can die doing this, and that's not something that we need in this community. Like, people need to be safe and stuff like that. And, you know, I have like my degree in doing dumb shit, so I'm working on my master's in dumbassery right now, and maybe someday I'll even get up to my doctorate. But just make good choices and, you know, progress yourself. Don't just go right to that 90 footer and throw yourself off. Like, it might go good once, but, you know, like, it's not gonna be something that you can maintain. So just do what you enjoy, you know. And that's one thing about boating, that you can really enjoy multiple different facets, and everybody gets their own level of enjoyment out of this, whether you're like, you're on a multi-day trip and you're enjoying the camping, or you're on like the Rogue River and you're steelhead fishing, or you're you know, and you catch that big fish, like, you might enjoy that, or you might enjoy going off 100-foot waterfalls. You might just enjoy like hanging out with your friends at the river and running, you know, middle white salmon or the Upper Gully or something like that. And, you know, so just do what makes you happy, you know. Like, do this for you and not for those other reasons, and you're gonna have a lot of success, and you're gonna see yourself progress pretty quickly, usually, you know. The other thing with boating is a lot of it's mental. Like, I would say like 60% of it is mental. Like, you can get like a mental block where you're like, let me think of a rapid, like, oh, you know, like, you go down Pillow Rock, you know, like, and you're 14 years old and you swim Pillow Rock, you might have that built up in your mind as like this big crazy rapid, and then you go back as like an adult or, you know, a little bit older, and you're like, oh yeah, Pillow Rock is pretty chill rapid actually. But yeah, so like kayaking's a lot of kayaking, paddling, it's just mental as well. So like, you know, you have to like work on staying calm, you know, mind right, lines right all the time. You gotta like, you know, just it's part of the game is staying calm. You know, you get flipped upside down in your kayak, you have to like, you can't frantically like roll up, you have to like use good form and stuff like that, and that comes with experience. So just keep on working if you're out there trying to do those things, and network out, you know, feel free to reach out to one of us, you know, we're always out paddling, and yeah, there's lots of good resources out there for people that are trying to learn and stuff like that. And I mean, I've never like actually like taught somebody how to raft, like, oh yeah, this is how you like hold your paddle. Like, I mean, I've taught like customers how to do that stuff, yeah. But never like somebody that's like trying to like do like little white. I'm not like, oh yeah, this is like how you, you know, do this, and this is where you're going to start, and like progress them all the way through. I usually just like paddle with people and, you know, just give them a couple pointers, like stuff that I learned from either raft racing or one of these great people that I've learned from, like Austin or Daniel or Matt Dvorak out in Colorado taught me a bunch of stuff too. And, you know, take advice from a bunch of different people, but don't do it all at once, obviously. You know, you don't want to get overloaded with information. And there's not one right way to do this either. You know, like I have more of like a calm, relaxed style. Dan McCain, power rafter. Like, yeah. He's paddling hard almost all the time when he's rafting, which I like that too. There's not like, so what I'm trying to say is that there's not like one right way to do this and a wrong way. Like, just do what works for you. You're going to have your own style, but like, be intuitive to like listening to other paddlers and taking their advice and stuff. And yeah.
That's awesome advice.
That's my two cents, and you know, I'm kind of rambling a little bit, but hope that you guys enjoy that and can kind of take something out of that and apply it to your progression and get you out there.
I think that's really important for people to hear. I think that's just good advice for the general paddler out there, just to kind of hear and from somebody who's running big stuff these days.
Yeah, I mean, and like I run easy stuff all the time. Like I enjoy, like when I run like a river like the Peshtigo River in Wisconsin, I'm going out there, I'm trying to catch eddies, I'm trying to surf, I'm trying to have fun with my friends, I might be trying to film, so I'm like trying to go fast, like working on like stroke rate and stuff like that. Another good thing for like kayakers is like, you see this a lot more like on the East Coast, is people obtaining, where like you paddle up rapids, and that's like kind of teaches you like form and like paddle angle and stuff like that, and just like how and when to apply that power, because like, you know, most of us, we're not like, you know, I'm 6'4", like I've got long reach and stuff, so like, I mean, I can do things, but like I'm still just like applying power like when needed. Like there's like a lot of finessing that you're using, and then sometimes you might need like those power strokes. So, and that's all like dependent on the person, like what type of body type you are and stuff like that. And that gets more complicated than what I can really get into, because I don't really know everything. But yeah, we'll just say, you know, do what works for you.
Well, before we do, we always end the episode with a gear of the week, talking about one of our favorite pieces of gear. But before we do, are there any last things you want to talk about, or anything you want to do a shout out for?
You know, I'm going to just talk about I actually just went on a trip down to Sawyer Paddles down in Southern Oregon here, and man, they are great. Like, I've been paddling like a Sawyer Canyon X. Do you paddle Sawyer Paddles?
Yeah.
I really like enjoyed it. I felt like I had like a lot of power, and I've been paddling like different wood paddles and stuff, and you know, doing what I'm doing, like I break paddles all the time, or like if I use just like a commercial customer paddle now, like I'll just bend it right in half. Like all my paddles have like multiple bends in them. I'll be at the put in with my knee and kind of like bending my paddles back and stuff. Well, I got a Sawyer from Josh. I was borrowing one of Josh's Sawyers. He's one of their sponsored paddlers, and I like was like, dude, this thing is super durable. I used it all summer for guiding and doing like low water runs and stuff. They're super durable. So anyways, I go down to the factory and I see how they make these things. And like we pull up and we get in their parking lot and they've got all these pieces of like Doug fir. They're 1x3 strips of wood. So like 1 inch thick, 3 inches wide. And I was like, I bet you that's what they make these paddles out of. And sure shit, I went in the factory and got in there and they're like gluing all these pieces of wood together and they had like lathes and stuff and they're like making all those paddles by hand. And it was just impressive just to see like the craftsmanship and just like how like, you know, how much quality they actually put into building their paddles. It was pretty impressive. And I suggest, you know, if you're in that area, like either stop by Sawyer Station, or I don't know if they do like factory tours or anything, but if you can, I would highly suggest it because it is really cool to see how all the different products that they make. Like they make everything from like raft racing full carbon paddles to like, you know, they make, I got a set of oars for them and I really think that they make the best oars.
Which oars did you get?
I got the Dynalites. I'm not sure.
Dynalite's a blade. Is it a separate blade?
It's yeah, shaft. Yeah, yeah. I got like a 9-foot shaft. I'm not exactly sure what the model of the shafts were that I got, but I got the Dynalite blades and
they're what awesome. Color are the shafts?
Black.
Yeah, you probably got the MXs or MXGs.
Yeah, MXGs. I think
That's my favorite ore.
Yeah,
that's easily the best whitewater ore.
I saw them like laying up the blades actually, and they use like really high quality like carbon fiber and stuff, and just like manufacturing is so crazy because like you have like all these different products that are meant for like specialty applications. Like with a paddle, you have to find like carbon fiber that's going to like lay down and all those like little cracks and stuff on, you know, all those different curvatures on a paddle. So it's like, you know, just like getting their sourcing right and like they're doing it right.
It's hard. It's hard. You can't just jump into that market and start making oars and paddles.
You can make your own paddle, but you can't like make a paddle with like the quality and craftsmanship that they're making it with. It's incredible what they're doing down there. So definitely check them out over at Sawyer Station or hit them up on paddleandoar.com. That's their website.
What raft paddle? Do you know which raft paddle you're using?
I use a Canyon X.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like it's got a carbon fiber like shaft on it and like a wood, you know, face or blade, I guess is what they'd call it. Yeah. With like a wood blade, and it's got like carbon inlays and like a little tip around the edge so that you don't like break the edge. But yeah, I really enjoy it. Yeah.
Cool. Well, for my gear of the week, I fully love Sawyer stuff too. I could go on and on about all their stuff, but I think we covered it pretty good there without making this a Sawyer commercial.
Yeah, no, by no means is this a Sawyer commercial. Manufacturers make great paddles, but
yeah,
I really enjoy their paddles.
Yeah, they make good stuff. My gear of the week is actually a class that we offer. So this is going to be a commercial for my company. I have a rafting company, and we're bringing in an instructor, Mark Hurst, from the UK, in a couple weeks to do an International Rafting Federation class, and it's March 25th. It's a 3-day raft guide course or a 5-day trip leader course, and it's less of a class and more of like a test of your skills. And so the International Rafting Federation has a set of metrics that they judge guides on, and if you get a certification, it just tells river outfitters around the world that you have this base level of skills. So if you're looking to learn how to raft guide, this isn't the class for you. You should go and take a regular raft guide class. But if you're an experienced guide and you want to basically see if you're using current standards or learn kind of what's happening internationally,
or if you want to go signed off. I think if you want to go overseas, it's like a good thing to have as well. Like where you're like actually like, hey, here's my paperwork from International Rafting Federation. Not like, yeah, I learned from this guy, Aaron. He's kind of crazy, but he knows his shit. You know, like it's like they have like an actual like curriculum and stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I decided to offer the class because I wanted to take it. We teach these rowing classes and I wanted some sort of certification for myself to back up our rowing classes. And so I just wanted to get it done, and I've been doing research about it, and it's pretty interesting. And I thought it was going to be a class where I learned, but it's actually mostly a test of my abilities. And I think it's pretty cool. And, you know, as I go to other parts of the world for guiding and I see other cultures, you kind of watch them and some of them are kind of sketchy. Like, they haven't learned certain things yet. And so I'm really glad this exists because they can go to other parts of the world. Some parts of the world are amazing and they have great, great guys. But other parts, you know, they just, you know, pull locals off the streets, gave them a paddle. And somebody who was a class 2 boater taught them. And so the point of the IRF classes are to create standards around the world.
Yeah.
And so anyway, we have this course if anybody's interested out there and coming out and taking
river,
it.
What river is it on, Zach?
We're going to do it here in Hood River based on, we're going to go whatever rivers are flowing at that time.
Yeah.
You know, in March it could be the Hood, it could be the White Salmon. Yeah. We might go the Klickitat, maybe the Washougal. So we're just going to choose the rivers each day based on what's best for the course.
Is it more for rowing or more for paddling?
It's all paddling.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we might talk about rowing a little bit. And so it's interesting. We teach rowing classes. And so this IRF course is for paddling. So it's not a perfect match. But I just wanted to get the experience in the class personally. So I was pretty motivated to do it. But it's mainly meant for commercial rafting guides that are experienced that want to kind of learn the current standards.
Cool.
So that's my gear of the week is self-promotional this weekend. It's not actually gear. But I wanted to shout that class out. So
yeah, I've never done anything like that, like an actual like instructor like teaching you. You know, I just kind of learned from.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I went to like a guide school and stuff, but I mean, like it would be cool just to like have that like paperwork to be like, yeah, I'm like actually, you know, and like what are they actually like working on in there? Like, what's like an exercise that you can share with everybody?
Yeah.
That,
I'm the same way as you. I don't like taking classes. I'm a person who likes to go out and do and learn that way. And because of that, I have a lot of bad habits. Like, my kayaking would be way better if I was taught. I just went out with friends on how to kayak. And so I'm sure my technique is awful. And same thing with skiing. Like, I used to be a ski instructor, but they never required us to do the PSIA stuff, mm-hmm. So I never did.
Right.
So I just, like, taught based on what people taught me. And I'm sure I was not, like, a world-class ski instructor, but I could teach people to ski. And so this course is sort of along the lines of getting some basic skill set for teaching. And I know that like they make you flip. They watch you flip, which if you talk to a lot of boaters out there, they've maybe never flipped a boat. And I'm sure some guides have never flipped a boat. It's hard for you to believe, I know.
Yeah.
But like they actually watch you and time you get back in the boat. And
it's really important to work on that.
Yeah.
When we were on the, like I learned on the Kern River and it was like always hot as hell down there. So we'd be at the overnight camp, you know, there's like an overnighter and you raft down to like the same camp every night. They like kind of like the rafting company like leases it from the Forest Service. So we'd go down there in the eddy and it would be like 100 degrees out, you know, and in the middle of summer and we just like practice on flipping our rafts. And it'd also be like, you know, we would always try to do like the dry flip. And like that's like the where you like actually flip it's the so raft hard. And you don't go in the water. It's so hard. It's more just like, but it gives you a lot of practice of like climbing on that upside down boat and like every paddler, it works a little bit different from them. Like with like my rafts, I don't have to climb on the bottom of the raft. I can get on the, just on the edge and put my fingers in the bailing holes and flip the raft over. But like you get into like a bigger raft, like you get like a 16-foot raft or something like that, like it's a lot harder to flip over.
Yeah.
So it's good to practice that. And like also like if you have your own raft, you can kind of rig it up so that it makes it easier for you to climb on top of your upside down boat or flip it from the water.
Yep.
You know, like you can put like little straps down there or like if you have like one of the air rafts, they're kind of hard to actually like put your flip line like through like where the floor laces in, or like I use my T-grip of my paddle a lot and I just like stick it in the little bailing holes. So like what some people will do is they'll like rig like little cheater straps down there that you can actually like hook your T-grip into or hook your carabiner from your flip line into and actually flip the raft back over. So
those are pretty advanced flipping techniques, like not like that stuff that I think is even beyond this class we're taking.
Really?
Yeah, I think that this class is mainly going to talk about using flip lines, But, man, using a paddle if you row boat back over is a pretty sweet move.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's just kind of what's, like, there and available. Like, it's a good... Like, for me, like, I'm 6'4", so it's pretty easy to flip the raft back over. But, like, for somebody that's, like, 5'5" or 5'6", you know, it might be a little bit more of a struggle. So,
but, and also, Aaron, I bet you're the kind of person that likes doing this stuff, and you flipped a lot, so you've seen it. But yeah, I would say you'd be surprised how many private boaters have never flipped a boat, and how many river guides that are somewhat experienced river guides have never even done it in practice.
Yeah.
I'm always surprised by that, because I know when I was learning to guide, I was like super enthusiastic. I wanted to flip every boat. I wanted to run rapids upside down. And that's kind of like my take on it. But a lot of guides have maybe done it once or never done it and never seen one in practice.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's something that's really important. Like when I was guiding out in Colorado, I'd talk to guides and they're like, yeah, I've never actually flipped a raft. Yeah. I'm like, what are you going to do when that actually happens? Like, it's a good thing. You know, like a good friend of mine once said, like, if you're not swimming, you're not switching it up enough. So, like, if you're one of those people that haven't flipped your raft over yet, like, get yourself into a little bit of a situation where, like, you do flip your raft over, and just having that experience, you know, whether, like, do it in a safe manner, obviously, or, like, a lot of times when I flip my raft over, it's because I'm, like, surfing or something like that. You know, I flip it over, climb back in, self-recover. But, like, your self-recovery skills, those are things that really can't be, like, taught. I can't be like, oh, when you flip your raft over, like, I can tell you what to do, but, like, every scenario is going to be different. There's, like, different variables in there. Like, you know, you might lose your paddle when you flip over. You might, you know, there might be somebody holding on to the other side of the raft, and you're, like, trying to flip it over, and you can't get it, you know? And, like, it's really important to practice that, especially as you're getting onto harder runs. Like, it's, you know, it could be life or death, you know? Like, it's as simple as that, so... you know, practice.
Yeah, so the course assumes people have done it, and you have to show up and prove you can do it quickly. So just some things that come to mind that he's going to test us on is, like, make us do a safety talk and observe our safety talk to make sure we're covering everything and doing it in a, like, a good manner, and we're communicating things well. A paddle talk to a crew that we can demonstrate proper strokes. He's going to watch us throw bags and make sure we're doing it well. And also just observe us guiding to make sure that we can catch eddies and move around the river effectively. So it's a pretty interesting thing. I'm feeling pretty comfortable that I'll pass because I have a lot of experience and I better pass.
Right.
But when I read the curriculum, I'm a little bit nervous. I'm like, man, I haven't done some of these things in a long time. Hopefully I still have my ability to throw a throwback super accurately, especially when there's an instructor watching me make me nervous. You know, when you're when you're throwing your throwback to your buddy and he's about to swim at class five, somehow you get to do it. You, like, find that ability. Yeah. You, like, focus because you're like, I got to do this. But then when somebody's observing you, there's a certain level of nervousness about it that I'm worried about that I'm going to mess up. So I'm excited. I'm personally excited to take the class. And we have room. So if anybody's interested, please let us know. So anyway, that's the end of the episode, I think. Aaron, unless there's anything else to add in.
No. Thanks for listening.
Yeah. Yeah. And thanks for joining us for another episode. If you want to send us an email, send it to theriverpodcast@gmail.com. And if you like our episodes and want to review us on iTunes, that would be super cool. And yeah, thanks for joining me, and we'll see you next time.